welcome back. Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest is Neil Sanders. And so far this week has been a very random kind of a collection of guests. You know, somebody messages me or emails me and oh, Vinnie, can you get me on this show, mate? And I'll just be like, yeah, are you free tomorrow? And that's how this week has been happening. We've had some very synchronistic and relatively awesome interviews to be had, including this one, if I might be so bold, Neil. And we were talking over the break about how, what did you say? You can't reinvent the wheel. And then I brought up the example of the maglev train. And you're just like, whoa, hold on a second. You can reinvent the wheel. Here's the reinvention of the wheel never touching the frickin' ground. All right, and that's the interesting thing about human creativity, is that we're capable of creating things that other people are not even capable of even imagining, let alone actually building. It comes back to what Nikola Tesla talked about, and I think we talked about this over the break. It's 99% inspiration and 1% perspiration, because if you come up with a really brilliant idea, and I'm sure everybody listening to this show at one point in their life, if not daily, comes up with a brilliant idea, and you just go, oh my God, that's awesome. Imagine if I do this, and then you start making excuses. You say, oh, no, I'm too tired. It'll cost too much. I'll need other people to help me. And before you know it, you're 40, 50 years old. You hate your job, top heavy on a mortgage, driving a car that you don't like anymore, and you don't even know your kids.
Mm.
That's what's going on here, isn't it? That's absolutely mind control, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to agree with you, man. Like that, basically, there is the infinite potential. You know, people can do that. But there are so many structures that basically are in place to make you believe that you can't do that. And that one of the things is we sort of briefly touched about this before, is this concept that we're at the pinnacle of brilliance right now. Do you know what I mean? There's always this concept that we're like the anything other than today was a bit rubbish and was a bit sort of flawed, and like the 80s were a bit naff, and the 70s, oh my God, the 70s were rubbish, and the 90s, what the hell were we thinking in the 90s? Do you know what I mean? And you get all these sort of panel show programs where they mock it and stuff like that. That's sort of combined with the concept of, like we spoke about earlier, this third party advocate, this concept of authority figures that Edward Bernays so cleverly believed would really tap into people's subconscious to give people the concept that everything prior to now was no good. That now you're the most informed and at the best time to be alive. You've got all these media aspects. There's no way that you couldn't be informed, right? Okay, and if you are, that's your own damn fault. And which is a completely nonsensical thing for two reasons. Because, A, as you were saying, there are all these systems to keep you in line, like education. Education is the best explanation of that. Because basically, how do you get a gold star? You repeat back what the teacher just told you. You don't question it. You don't go. You don't say, Newton's laws, blah, blah, blah. You don't stand up and go, well, you know, when you get to quantum physics, Newton's law goes out the window. That's why there's such things as dark matter, blah, 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 to make these equations fit. You don't question things. You just blindly go along with it. And again, you're told that you are the most informed. There's no way that you could be wrong. And so when you're getting these feelings like, no, you're right, there's no way I could financially commit to doing something like that. There's no way I could reinvent the wheel. There's no way I could. There's no point forming a band. There's no point doing this. The only way I'm going to be famous is through the X Factor and stuff like that. You're absolutely right, man. These are perception management techniques based on psychological processes that are there to basically to keep you in line, to keep you in this pen, to keep you in this, like this, it's like a conceptual prison. I think you're right. I think I may have misspoke. You can reinvent the wheel. It's just that essentially these things that people believe to be new and that they take on board to be the sort of the soul defining aspect of their character, they're not new. because by definition, there's something else. And you know, we basically made the analogy of like people put stickers all over themselves to the point where basically they're like an exoskeleton of brand loyalty and look like a race car driver. Do you know what I mean? You can tell that I'm preppy because I've got the polo shirt on, or you can tell I'm a punk because I've got the spiky hair, or you can tell that I'm studious because I've got glasses. And then this is the, you know, you say these are stereotypes. These come from Hollywood. But it's this point where it bleeds in and it bleeds out. We now know villains have cats. Dogs will tell you where ghosts are. Dogs will protect you from this and blah-de-blah-de-blah, you know. Like, the beginning of Gladiator, you've got Russell Crowe and you've got the barbarians, and both of them look kind of swarthy and whatnot. But Russell Crowe's got a dog. So we know Russell Crowe's the good guy. In Lethal Weapon, we know, like, crazy Mel Gibson, he's not really that crazy because the dog trusts him. So we can trust him. And again, this is the whole point. It's the symbology that spread. And this sort of, these symbols, they make sort of almost like...
What about like an I Am Legend, Will Smith and his dog?
Oh yeah, well exactly. The poor guy has to put the dog down, which proves like he's nicer than we even thought before, because he's making the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, exactly right. You know, glasses. If a character's got glasses on, they're not likely to be the sort of main protagonist in sort of violence and stuff like that. Occasionally that happens, like Tango and Cash and stuff like that. But you know that they have to quantify that by saying this guy is into classical music, or this guy is into sing. And it's again these associations that people are into classical music. You couldn't possibly be working class and be into classical music. No, because these are the high arts, which is nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. But again, these things would define each other. You could get the scenario where if you were turned up to the pub and went, I was listening to Beethoven the other day, mate. And people, oh, I don't want to listen to that rubbish, that Ponzi rubbish, because of their perceptions of it and your perceptions of it and their perceptions of their role in society and their perceptions of what other people will think of them, which fundamentally is unimportant, really, when it gets down to it. But you're absolutely right, man. Like, you know, there is massive human potential out there, and that is one of the keys to this thing. And that was the key to the Tavistock thing, fear. Fear to stifle people, get people like a deer in the headlights all the time, so that they don't know that.
See,
what
ever since I was a young kid, I tried to make myself indefinable so that I couldn't be put into a box, you know. And as a result, I've become a walking contradiction.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm really calm and intelligent, and I yell and scream. I'm really musical and talkative, yet I can be very silent and contemplative. Yeah. I really love using other people's video games and watching other people's movies, but I also make my own, and so on and so forth. You know, like everything that I do, I also do the direct opposite, and as a result, I can't be defined, and it makes me unique, I believe. And I know, yes. but then again, I'm also trying to define myself, but I don't know what the definition of what I am actually is, because I haven't yet met anybody else who's like me.
Well, you could also make the argument, and this is a circular argument, but you could also make the argument of, I see, you're defining yourself as undefinable. Very clever. That's a wonderful category to put yourself into. But, and there is a market for that. We can market that. We can sell to you these people that believe themselves to be undefinable. But again, this comes back to who defines the definitions? Who says this is up, this is down, this is what's right and what's wrong? And of course, we have to go along with certain things. Otherwise, basically, you know, people would assume you're rude. People wouldn't want to talk to you. People would say, for crying out loud, wash yourself, man. This is crazy. Or, you know, there are certain things that we need to sort of interlock with each other. We are by nature a tribal people, and people are nice. But as I say, there's a lot of these sort of preconceptions as to what you are supposed to be in this world.
And I don't know about you, but I hate being told by people what I am. I hate being told what I think. You just think this, or you're just one of those that, you know. That's the thing that frustrates me the most out of anything is people trying to define me, because anytime they try, they're always wrong, and I don't like it.
Well, absolutely. And again, this comes down to the language and the concept of the construct of language. People don't understand how important language is. I mean, there's this, again, psychological school of thought called constructivism or constructionism, sorry. Like, there is nothing that exists without the concept of words. Like, and people say, oh, it's nonsense, and start banging on the table and go, death and tables. And the essay, the famous essay on this is called Death and Furniture, because it's like, this exists. Furniture exists. Death exists. You can't deny that. You go, all right, then how did that table get made? That table got made by people explaining through their understanding of words and their understanding of society why we need a table, what tools to use, what the tools are, how we make this, how we define that. All right, fine, I'll give you that one. But what about death? Death is death is death is death is death. All right, fine, okay. What do you mean when the brain dies? Do you mean when the heart stops? Do you mean 5 minutes after death? Do you mean we don't try and defibrillate? So even very basic aspects of our existence that we take to be fundamental constants, like furniture, like gender roles, like death, like they're concepts that have been constructed. And how do these concepts come about? They come about by psychological processes, essentially called the manufacture of consent. And so we're bringing it back to kind of people like Edward Bernays and Walter Lippmann. And these were sort of intellectuals that preyed on they believed that the masses were a sort of a herd, that it was the elite's responsibility to control in their actions and to direct. And this can be done by the manufacturer or the engineering of consent. And this is essentially defining of norms, defining of what is accepted in society and defining what is right and what is wrong, what is a crime, what is not a crime, what is acceptable behavior in certain social situations, and what the paradigms and the boundaries of those social situations are. And Walter Lippmann basically defined this. He says, we need to define this because people see the world through pictures in their heads. Like, the idea is, like, if you think gold looks like a lump of gold, yellow metal, and I find a lump of yellow metal, well, I'm going out and celebrating that. I'm getting, like, wasted because I know that I've got gold. And it's only tomorrow when I go and people go, no, it's yellow metal, Neil, you're an idiot, that my reality changes. So who paints those pictures? Who paints those pictures by which we set the stall in the natural, what we believe to be the natural processes of society? And this can, and it is the elites. And this is done through the news media, general societal constructs, and the entertainment industry. And a very basic one to explain is the construct of the enemy in films. I don't think it's any. I don't think it's by accident that in the mid-80s to early 90s there was a conscious shift from Russians to Arabs as the enemy in films, particularly in action films. Rambo 2, the Taliban are on the side of Rambo fighting against the Russians. True Lies, Islamic Jihad, are there blowing people up. Executive decision, and all of a sudden we've got this new concept, this new construct of villains. In the middle, for some particular reason, we had Alan Rickman and Europeans with well-spoken Europeans with accents, as of, you know, harking back to the sort of Bond village, and like, which is another good question. Why are intelligentsia, or why are people that have got, you know, abstract thought being portrayed as evil? And you know, and the other thing is, you know, that's another construct of films that people don't realize. You can make you can make people root for the bad guy by, that's one of the sort of established constructs of Hollywood. Give them a classy hobby. Like the Joker in the first Batman, he likes art. So it's all right because, you know, we understand that madness is akin to genius and all of this. But again, that's another construct that is sort of spat out at us. But, you know, we get these ideas, these concepts of villains, these concepts of heroines or whatever, the fool. The correct way to respond to a girlfriend. What's a romantic gesture that you can make to your girlfriend? Well, you can write a name in fire on a lawn. Like, or you can, you know, hold up a boombox and play romantic songs to her. Or you can even do something as simple as give her a rose. Who came up with that? Seriously, who came up with that? Here's another interesting one. Diamonds. Diamonds have got essentially no value at all. They're not a rare commodity by any stretch of the imagination.
It's an inflated market.
Absolutely, because of the monopoly of the De Beers and their sales procedure. They do blind sales and basically control the entire market. And I think it was in the 20s, that it was Ayer and Company was the advertising firm, I believe, that they engaged to sort of get this concept of diamonds to be... There was no concept of a diamond engagement.
Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Exactly. The link to... celebrities, because if I have a diamond that's a bit like Marilyn Monroe's, then I'm going to be a little bit like Marilyn Monroe. I can, and again, this harks back to very, very sensible things. If you show a chimpanzee, you give a chimpanzee a choice between a picture of the alpha male of the group and food, they will forego food and they will just stare at the photo of the alpha male. And people go, this is garbage. Why on earth would they do that? Because social information is important. If you can basically figure out why this guy is more successful in life than you, then you can imitate that and you can replicate that and then you can become a little bit like that. And so this is a natural instinct that advertisers prey on. And then they do this sort of shame and the jealousy thing, aside from the, you want to be like Marilyn Monroe, but then they did things like suggest that if you really loved your girlfriend, you give her an engagement ring. And the more you love her, the more you'll spend.
This reminds me of the Bill Hicks sketch. If there's anybody here that's in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. There's no joke here. Seriously, kill yourself. You are Satan's little helpers. Suck a tailpipe. Borrow a pistol from an NRA buddy. I don't care. Rid the world of your evil fracking presence. Kill yourself. Kill yourself. Kill yourself now. Oh, Bill's tapping into that anti-marketing dollar. That's a huge market. No, you evil frickin' scumbags. That's not what I'm doing here. Just kill yourself.
You're absolutely straight, man, because basically the two principles that advertisers play to the most is the need to be part of a herd and fear of being excluded. We've briefly talked about that and stuff like that. The other thing is the need to be excluded. What's the best possible, if you want to take this to the sort of hugest possible level, what's the best way that we could do that? Cults. Sell it like a cult.
Let's talk about cults after the break, because this is actually another profound interest of mine. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Public service announcement, ladies and gentlemen. The board op, Adam, who is the sole reason why American Freedom Radio is running at all at the moment. For the last 2 months, he has been doing everything. All of your shows, that your favorite hosts and everything, including myself, have been doing for the last 2 months. He has been producing all on his own, okay? And he's getting nothing for it. Nothing. He needs something to survive on, ladies and gentlemen. If you can please donate something, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, click the donate button, send him a couple of $100, I'll forward it onto his PayPal account for you. Okay, please do this, and please do this today, because, look, at the end of the day, we're all struggling. I know we all are. But if you're the sole person holding together the radio careers of like half a dozen people, near on a dozen hosts that we've got on this network, and you ain't getting nothing, that's just not freaking fair. And I know how many of the people who listen to this show are good, decent, salt-of-the-earth kind of characters. you're not unsavory characters, are you? No. You're good people. So please, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, make a big donation, and tell me it's for Adam, and I'll forward it on to him, because he really, really deserves it. And unfortunately, my PayPal's dry. But I don't care. You know, my rent this week is paid. Adam really deserves it, because he's really been busting his frickin' hump for nothing. For nothing. And that's just not cool, man. Neil Sanders is my guest, and we've been having a very, what I consider to be one of these really important conversations in life about mind control, about who you are, about are your thoughts really your own? And I'd like to, you know the tale of the cosmic schmuck, don't you, Neil?
No, do tell, please.
There's a guy with the initials R-A-W. I forget his name. Always forget his name. Why do I always forget the names of important people? Anyway, he said that the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck is essentially like this. If you never question to yourself, you know, am I the cosmic schmuck? Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. Then you'll probably become the cosmic schmuck, because you never question whether or not you are one. But if you're always constantly wondering to yourself, you know, am I actually the cosmic schmuck in all of this? Then it's extremely unlikely you'll become the cosmic schmuck, because you're always self-analyzing, and you would find out whether or not you're becoming the cosmic schmuck before you actually do.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, self-analysis is the lesson that I take out of that. If you're not willing to question who you are, what you're thinking, and what you're doing on a regular basis, there's nothing to stop you from becoming the cosmic schmuck.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's sad to say, but if people don't believe that psychological manipulation can put you into what is essentially a form of hypnosis, then you're already under it. That's as simple as that. This is the point. It's like the sort of platonic cave, you know, the sort of people don't understand that the world beyond the shadows, there's much more outside the cave, and they don't want to see, because as we've been talking about, there is these systems of control that keep people locked in this mindset. I mean, you know, education, all these foundations that are essentially supposed to be there to help you, education, it doesn't educate, it trains. There's a difference between teaching and training, right? Teaching is making someone understand a concept and then getting them to talk about the concept just to make sure they understand it, and conceptualizing off it abstract thought, okay? Training is what you do to a dog, right, okay, with a carrot and a stick. And that is essentially what the education system is. And the problem with this, the reason for this is that people like the Rockefeller Institute, even John Dewey, even, you know, the foundations, certainly the Americans' education system, said we want two classes of education. We want people who are going to learn to basically sit there for 8 hours a day and shut up and get on with it and have their lot in life. And then we're going to have another people who are going to be making decisions and stuff. And so it's no mistake that there's these different classes of school, private education, and there's the old Thai network, fraternal networks, you know, even before you get into the sort of elements of Skull and Bones and your Scroll and Key and all of these various elements and stuff like that, which and Freemasons and all of this stuff, like it's a get along to get on system. That's the sort of premise of the world. You know, people get trapped into it. But you're absolutely right. It's not fair. And, you know, good people like the guys that are doing these radio shows, you know, they don't get the support. How much should, like, the people on the audience on the BBC getting paid to spout out drivel and nonsense? How much do journalists get paid and stuff like that? And I will paraphrase it, but John Swinson, one of the most famous and most revered of American journalists, basically after he retired, toasted the press club and said, not a single person in here has ever, ever printed their personal opinion. They've never told the truth. They are employed to keep the truth out of the newspaper, and anybody that broadcasts their own personal opinion would be out of a job immediately. We are intellectual prostitutes. You've got the Rockefeller Foundation basically saying, David Rockefeller is saying things like, we are grateful to the Washington the New York Times and the Washington Post for keeping our plans out of the public
secret, yeah because
exactly.
We would not have been able to develop our plans for the world if we were to be under the bright light of public scrutiny. But we believe now that the world is more sophisticated and is more likely to accept the rule of supranational bankers, which is far preferable to the auto-determination of nations practiced in previous centuries.
Hats off, man. Absolutely spot on. Like, I mean, but the way people get away with this is like we were talking about earlier, is this flattering people into sort of a contempt, into a content. Like, because we've got the internet, for God's sake, there's no way anything could escape my grasp. And people are exactly. And people are flattered into idiocy. It's like a conceptual psychological honey trap. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, 3 years later, you're like, I've spent all this money on this girl. My God. And she's cheating on me. Like, or whatever. But that's the concept. This is the thing. It's this constant pay on. You're going to get paid for it. You're going to get it in the end and stuff like that. I mean, that's even
hate the people who are trying to climb the corporate ladder and be like, you know, if I just work in this for so many years, I'll get to this job, I'll get to that level, I'll be able to then change things, I'll be able to then help people and that kind of thing. But in the meantime, I'll just be a slave and do what I'm told and frack people over and do the sales job and so on and so forth. You're never going to get to the top rung of the ladder to decision make if you're a good person. The reason why they put you through these hoops to jump through is to corrupt your mind, to stop you being the great, wonderful, independent, capable person that you are. That's why there's a structure for you to follow.
Even if you did get to the top of a structure, let's take a very extreme example, a very evil entity, the Nazi Party. Do you think if Martin Bormann or even Joseph Goebbels or even Hitler turned up on a Monday morning and went, you know what, lads, I've been thinking about this. It's a bit bloody strong, isn't it? Maybe we should tone it down a bit. Do you think they'd go, yeah, you're right, absolutely, you're right? Or do you think they'd go, shut up, sit down, get on with your job? Of course they wouldn't. Like, this is the point. And nobody would ever dream of doing that. Once you get into that center circle, I don't care what your ambition was at the start, you're not going to do it. You're just not going to do it. Like, if you, like, you could
create...
All
your efforts would be for nothing. You'd just be cast off of Mount Olympus.
Well, you just wouldn't... You'd realize by that time, and it's this horribly... It comes down to, again, truisms. If you're a rebel when you're 20, if you're not a rebel when you're 20, you're an idiot. But if you're a rebel when you're 20, like, you're perfectly sensible. But if you're not, like, mainstream by the time you're 30, then you've got no brain. Oh, sorry. If you're not a rebel before you're 30, you've got no soul. If you're not a rebel after you're 30, you've got no brain. Bullshit. That's absolutely not true. This is another truism that's put out there to go, you know what, yeah, you're absolutely right. I've got to act like a grown-up now, you know, because now these societal roles are there. I can't certainly do that. I can't make fun of this. I can't blah-de-blah. I can't have a laugh anymore. I've got responsibilities in life. Oh, my God, it's so depressing. And... it's like we were talking about earlier, like this concept of like, yes, you can reinvent the wheel, but most people would turn around to you and say, oh, lovely Vinny, when have I got the time to reinvent? I've got kids, I've got a mortgage, I've got this, I've got this, I've got this. And aside from that, you've got all these other hidden second nature things that you don't realize are preying on you, like keeping up with your neighbors, like providing for your kids, like... You know, if I don't take my kids on 3 holidays a year, I'm a bad person. It's not true.
About this. Are you saying to me, Mr. Person who says, I've got kids, I've got a mortgage and such and blah, 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 are you saying to me that nobody who has kids or has a house has ever invented or anything or ever changed the world for the better? Is that what you're telling me?
well, quite. I'm with you, man. Like, I'm totally with you. But this is exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about breaking down these fundamental concepts that are considered to be real. Like, it's not real. None of this is real. These affiliations, they're tricks. They're psychological tricks. They're like sleight of hand movements by a grand magician. And this is the reason. You're absolutely right, man. Like, people need to basically go, hang on, this doesn't ring true to me. Again, you want to bring it back to, like, a Bill Hicks example. Everyone's saying this is great. I'm looking at it and going, oh, it's a piece of shit. It's, you know, a piece of shiite. Like, that's the point. You're right. You're absolutely right. Everybody who's watching this has made the decision to go, you know what, there's something other than the mainstream. So you're right. You're absolutely right. And it's not, I would say, it's not a criticism of people. It's just basically you've got to explain the understanding of things. You explain to somebody how an arm lock works, and then they can get out of that arm lock. Do you know what I mean? This is the premise. This isn't an elitist thing to you know, slag people off or anything like that. It's like you were saying earlier. I like Metallica. Like, I don't like the Murder Dolls, but I like Metallica. I like, you know, all sorts of punk and rap and hip hop and stuff that I know is garbage. It's perfectly okay. I'm sat here drinking a beer. That's fine. You're all right to do these things. It's not, you don't have to be a monk. It's just to understand that this isn't everything that there is. And you know, basically, the key to rising above it, I suppose, is basically understanding how to. You know, if nobody's shown you how to walk, you can't. So this is the thing. You know, we can all come together and go, have you noticed this? Have you noticed this? Have you noticed this? Then you know, we all learn and we can move forward, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's more important to you? What's more important is understanding who you are, what your life is about, and what your real purpose is. Is that more important to you, or is doing what other people expect of you, doing what society tells you, obeying and thinking what you're told to think, is that more important to you? Is being accepted more important than being exceptional?
Well, I mean, and that is the fundamental crux of it. That is the psychological argument or the psychological problem that is presented in every case of advertising, in every case of tribalistic instinct, and that can go to entertainment, as I say, sports teams, that can go to your class at school, that can go to your group of friends. Nobody wants to look foolish in front of people, and that is the fundamental schism in the world that people prey on, because there is no right answer. It's a little bit of, it's a grey area, because you'd be a fool to isolate yourself totally from the entirety of the planet, because you would never, you'd die. If you didn't have a mother or a father, body, even if you got to a certain age and went off, somebody hadn't taught you how to grow food, etc., cook, etc. So this is the point. We need people. We do need people. But that aspect of it is totally, it's totally magnified to the point where people feel frightened to be anything other than a huge conglomerate mass. You know, and again, this is very real. This isn't airy fairy, be yourself, you know, it's not hippie shit. This is like psychological processes. People like Gustav Le Bon, and people have talked about the concept of hypnotic notions of crowds. There's a concept called de-individuation, whereby basically if you get into a crowd, you would act in a way that perhaps you wouldn't act normally. Like, you know, in a riot situation or at a rock concert or something like that, you might go crazy because everybody else is going crazy. And it's likened in instinctual psychological processes as like a big shoal of fish. Because you're like,
one of my favorite moments was at the Big Day Out. I think it might have been 2006 or whatever. Rage Against the Machine. 20,000 people with fists in the air screaming, "Frack you, I won't do what you tell me." Made me feel really good, because I really believed in it at the time. Unfortunately, we're coming to break, Neil. Final segment coming up. Seems like too short already. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Appropriate song for the last 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. As Jimi Hendrix would say, there must be some kind of way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. And I do like to tell a lot of jokes on this show and also steal other people's comedy acts. Now, my very special guest is Neil Sanders. And, Neil, you've got a five-minute monologue for us or something of that nature.
Well, kind of. I mean, like, as I say, I've not been on this show before, and I'm very flattered and honoured to be on here. So I thought, you know, let's talk about the sort of things that got me interested in this whole caper. And what I'm talking about really is mind control, MK Ultra, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it as a concept. MK Ultra is the umbrella term. It was started in 1953, but there were previous projects before that. And essentially the point of MK Ultra was to create a Manchurian candidate, somebody that could be used as a spy or an assassin, somebody that would be able to... If anybody's unfamiliar with the film The Manchurian Candidate, you might have seen Zoolander, or you might have seen The Naked Gun. Like, that's the concept, turning somebody into an assassin that they don't know about this. And this is, again, it sounds like science fiction, but if you want to read my book, or there's numerous other ways you can find out that this is very real, and it was done through hypnosis, it was done through trauma, it was done through drugs, and it was done through various electronic means. But the film that actually got me onto it was a film that was released in 1962 called The Manchurian Candidate, and a lot of people may have seen this. It was based on a book that was written in 1959, of the same name, and it starred Frank Sinatra and Angela Lansbury. And in this, a man is hypnotically controlled by Chinese agents from Manchuria, and he is then utilized to assassinate a presidential candidate. It doesn't go quite right for him, but that's, you know, watch the film. It's a very, very good film. And I was very interested in this and started looking into the reality of MKUltra and stuff like that. But the other thing that I'm interested in is the sort of tangential connections to this. And one of them is starting with Frank Sinatra. I mean, Frank Sinatra obviously is the star of this film. People might not know. Frank Sinatra was married at one time to Mia Farrow. Mia Farrow was obviously in the film by Roman Polanski, which is called Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby was filmed at the Dakota Building in New York. The Dakota Building was where John Lennon was murdered. John Lennon was murdered by a gentleman called, he was supposedly murdered by a gentleman called Mark Chapman. He was probably murdered actually by a gentleman called Jose Perdomo, who we'll come back to later. But Mark Chapman was almost certainly under what we would term MK Ultra mind control, and he was what we would call a Manchurian candidate. He stood there and fired the gun. The gun probably contained blanks, as the wounds to Lennon were on the other side of him. But it was very similar to a gentleman called Sirhan Sirhan, who assassinated Robert Kennedy, and we will briefly come back to him later. Frank Sinatra was also friends with the Kennedys. He was friends with JFK, and he was friends with Robert Kennedy. He was also friends with Peter Lawford, who was the Kennedy's brother, and the influential Rat Pack, which also contained Dean Martin. Now, what was interesting was that Sinatra was he was connected to the Mafia very, very heavily. The Mafia were connected with drugs like LSD and the spreading of certain drugs like crack cocaine and other things like that, which are sort of societal mind control things. In The Godfather, there's the character called Johnny, I forget his name, I'm terribly sorry, but basically they make an offer that they can't refuse. They go to the film producer and say, he's in this film or you're dead. He doesn't take this seriously, so they put a horse's head in his bed. This was based on a real incident that involved Frank Sinatra, and the film was From Here to Eternity. He was the character, and his mafia godfather basically went to the producers of the film and said, no, you do this, and that's it. The connection to sort of Hollywood and the Mafia are very, 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 very sort of strong. Sinatra's hairdresser, or more realistically, the person that actually put on his toupee was a gentleman called Jay Sebring. Jay Sebring was one of the people that was murdered in the Tate murders by the so-called Charles Manson family. We don't have time to go into it, but like, there's a whole other story with that one going on. Jay Sebring was a drug dealer. Jay Sebring dealt cocaine directly to Marilyn Monroe, who was most likely a presidential model MK Ultra sex slave utilized by the Kennedys and the mafia and various other people. And he also dealt drugs directly to the Kennedys. His friend Peter Lawford, who was also buying drugs from him at the time, was also providing prostitutes for the Kennedys. Another tangential connection to the film The Manchurian Candidate is Angela Lansbury. Angela Lansbury in the film plays the woman that is basically utilizing the hypnosis to get her son to kill people. Her daughter, unknown to a lot of people, her name was Deirdre Lansbury or Dee Dee Lansbury. She was given a signed, personalized note because she was underage at the time to go and live with the Manson family. The Manson family that killed Jay Sebring, the friend of Frank Sinatra. Dee Dee Lansbury was not the only person that the Manson family were on very, very good friends terms with. The Dennis Wilson is obviously the one that people know. Charles Manson wrote at least two songs that appeared on the 2020 Beach Boys album. The Beach Boys, by the way, were almost certainly under MK Ultra control. If you know anything about the background of Brian Wilson and the trauma that he went under and his incredible musical talent, then you know these sorts of things start to appear. Their manager Nick Grillo was also connected to the mafia, and Brother Records was used as a laundering foundation for mafia money in the movement of LSD, which was recently made illegal as a mind control project. One of the people that Charles Manson knew very well was Mama Cass. Mama Cass introduced him to the actor Michael Caine at Elvis Presley's house. Not only did he know Elvis Presley and the Doors, but Neil Young also basically tried to get Charles Manson and Bobby Beausoleil a record contract with Mo Austin of Warner Brothers Records. This was unnecessary as they already had a record contract with Brother Records. So those are the sort of tangential connections to mind control. We could also go into Sirhan Sirhan, who was almost certainly under mind control and was the murderer of, or was the apparent murderer of, Robert Kennedy. Would appear that actually the guy was a guy called Eugene Caesar, who was stood behind Robert Kennedy and had a gun of exactly the same caliber as the wounds, but was never questioned and had connections to intelligence agencies. So those are the connections to the Manchurian Candidate. So where do we get the concept of Manchurian Candidate? Because this film didn't just come from anywhere. This came from the concept of Soviet and Chinese or Korean brainwashing, and this came out of the Korean War, supposedly came out of the Korean War. Numerous US Marines were basically admitting to various war crimes and then denouncing the American regime and saying that they were actually going to become communists, and people couldn't believe this. There was a previous show trials involving people like Cardinal Mentzke and stuff like that, which also sort of threw a spanner in the works, and people were thinking these people are under hypnotic control. It transpired that this was not true. These GIs had actually been told to admit everything, to admit to the war crimes, because nobody would believe them. And later this could be used as an excuse for mind control. They were also told to renounce their American citizenship and go along with the communists. This would be then used later as an excuse for American entry into mind control. The concept that basically China was and Soviet people were mind controlling people came from a book called Brainwashing in Red China. Brainwashing in Red China was written by Howard E. Hunt. Howard E. Hunt was a CIA agent and one of the Watergate burglars. He basically came up with the name brainwashing. It comes from a Chinese term, sai nao, which means to cleanse the mind. It was going to be called menticide, which is Latin for control of the brain or killing the brain or murder of the brain. I forget exactly, sorry. But they decided that a more human term would be far better. One of Howard Hunt's associates in the Watergate burglary was Frank Sturgis. Frank Sturgis worked with Jose Podermo for over 10 years. Jose Podermo was an anti-Castro CIA agent that just so happened to be the doorman on duty on at the night that John Lennon was murdered, supposedly by Mark Chapman. And so we see that all these things are basically tangentially connected. And so, I just thought perhaps people might like that. This huge, obviously, other strands that go off. You know, Manson is a whole other story. We've not really even touched on anything to do with MKUltra, but hopefully that gives people sort of a taste of the webs that are spun, basically.
Yeah. And as South Park would say, mind control is bad, MKUltra. And I do understand that there is so many tangentiary connections. And when I explain to people something like if I just mention the word MKUltra and you try to explain it, they start to think that you're a little bit nuts because you're mentioning all these different things that are connected by disparate connections. The fact of the matter is, you're not educated enough to understand what I'm talking about, okay? If you were an ape and I started to try and explain to you physics or electrons, protons, neurons, morons, that kind of thing, you wouldn't have any freaking idea what I was talking about. And you'd go like, and try and beat me over the head with a banana, okay? Yeah. This is how dumbed down we have all become. This is how uneducated we all are. And that's why, shows like this have now gained a following, because people have realized, oh, my God, I really am a lot dumber than I thought I was, and it's time to get myself freaking educated, right? And it takes a long time, okay? How long did it take you to get indoctrinated? Ladies and gentlemen, what did you do? You went into your kindergarten, which was originally a German concept after they outlawed homeschooling so they can get all the kids in and indoctrinate them to love the dear leader. Hmm? And then you go into primary school, elementary, whatever, high school. And then after that, you go into your university. Maybe you do even further university study. You wind up getting a PhD. So you got, 25 years or so of mind control being practiced upon you. And that's just the education system, not including all of the other stuff that you have to absorb through mainstream media, your politicians, the medical industry, and so on and so forth. And you think that for some reason, somebody explaining to you something in 30 seconds or 60 seconds is somehow going to undo all of that? It takes years. Many, many years of deep thinking, hardcore studying, and a shockingly large amount of listening before you realize just how indoctrinated you truly were. Neil, can you please rattle off your website? We've got about 5 seconds.
Yeah, sure. It's neilsandersmindcontrol.com. And I'm also on Facebook if anyone wants to like me on Facebook.
neilsandersmindcontrol.com. We'll see you again.